Bear Nation, how we doing? This is your host, Rob Napoli, and you are tuning in to another episode of the Bear Necessities Podcast, a podcast where we sit down with entrepreneurs, ecosystem partners, and innovation folks to talk about what it takes to launch, create, and scale businesses across the world. How we doing, everybody? We're back again for another episode of the Bear Necessities Podcast. I am your host, Rob Napoli, and today I have Dr. Carla Fowler, who is MD, PhD, and elite executive coach. And for the last decade, she has been, you know, I like this, a secret weapon for scores of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and other senior leaders. Her unique approach combines research from performance science with timeless best practices to help top performers level up and achieve their goals. Dr. Carla Fowler, thank you so much for joining the pod today. How are you doing today?
Rob, I'm doing great. This is going to be fun.
I love it. Well, I'm excited to have you here. And I have two first questions based on the prep show and the original first question. So let's go with the original one first. How the fuck does a medical doctor become an executive, you know, elite executive coach? Why did you leave the medical profession and decide to be a coach?
That's such a great question, because there was definitely, it was not a popular decision. And I think there was definitely a lot of WTF going on. I mean, I think something to just know about me is that, you know, you've got this lifetime. I knew you need a job. You need to be able to support yourself. But I've always been a person who wanted to do stuff I was interested in. And it turns out, like, what I've always been really interested in is I like doing challenging things. I like learning things. I have always been really interested in people. Like, even, you know, in elementary school, like, I think I was busy looking around, like, how do people do stuff? Like, if some kid was popular, why are they popular? Like, what is it? What are the dynamics at play? And, you know, not in a very sophisticated way as a fifth grader, but, you know, but, and running experiments, you know, and I think that, I liked math and science, and I liked solving problems. And so ultimately, this is sort of how I ultimately got into doing an MD and a PhD. And it was a great program. It was funded, so I didn't have any debt. And I got to learn for like 10 years. And then ultimately, I was studying to be a surgeon. I was in residency. So think like Grey's Anatomy is, I mean, not quite like that. None of us were as beautiful, and we all were like underslept and smelled bad. Like, you know, it's just not a very romantic actuality. But, you know, I think one of the things that I did learn about medicine, I really found it meaningful to work with patients and help people, but also, there are a lot of constraints in the profession. You kind of get one thing in life if you're going to be a surgeon, and you also have to think about, like, where are your greatest strengths? And I think for me, one of the things I learned was that I loved thinking about performance. That's part of how I got into surgery in the first place, was it's a bunch of people who really like to think about the performance of their craft. You know, how do you level that up? But I felt like on the human systems part of it, it was not as high performing as it could have been. Like, there's just a lot of work to be done and the system's overtaxed. And ultimately, I think I wanted more autonomy. And so I jumped off the boat and kind of went into the entrepreneurship of saying, how do I focus on performance? How do I help people with it? Like, not to go be an academic. How do you like help people with it? And how can I build my own thing? And that was really exciting to me. And also scared as shit.
I mean, usually the most impactful things should scare you to some degree, you know? So we're going to come back to that, but in this kind of theme, as we were talking pre-show and getting, and, you know, prepping for this, you mentioned that you're a digital nomad and you're currently up in, I think, Wyoming and then moving out to Maine in the summer. You know, when you were, you know, as a doctor, right, if you were becoming a surgeon, you had been pretty tied to one place, the hospital you're at. When you decide to become an entrepreneur, Why did you also decide to become a digital nomad? I mean, was that like hand in hand? Was that something that just kind of like you decided later that you wanted to explore now that you're free? Like, tell me a little bit about, like, not only did you like leave training to become a surgeon and, you know, one of the highly probably highest sought after kind of like positions around, just to one, be crazy and start an entrepreneur, start your own business and be an entrepreneur, but two, like be a digital nomad and travel. What was that like, or what was that decision-making process for you?
So this is I have the personal story about it, but I love this because it also kind of ties in with some stuff that we were talking about, which is this idea of like, what are high-performing habits? Like, how do you be more productive? How do you be more successful? Well, however you want to put it. And I think one of the most important questions is progressively asking yourself, I can call this WTF DYW. You got to ask yourself, what the fuck do you want? What do you want? And before you can start using your time better, before you can start like leveling up your results, I think one of the most important questions is to ask yourself, what do I actually want? And I think that was part of what provoked leaving surgery and leaving medicine, was this realization that I had always been a person who wanted to, I love sports. I love being athletic. You know, I had a partner. I wanted to spend time with him and have a relationship. I wanted to have work that was really engaging. And I think I was adding up the equation and realizing that that wasn't going to work in the profession I had chosen. And, but then you say, okay, so even in asking myself, what do I want that work to look like? Before I'd even realized that maybe I wanted to be location independent, I knew that I wanted to have some time independence, like to think about how I built the schedules and the work, how I thought about that. And so the digital nomad thing, I think, was something I wanted ultimately. I didn't know exactly when that was going to happen. I think I knew that it would be easier to establish myself in a community, like face-to-face, really build that trust and a reputation. And so that's where I started. Like, I had an office in Seattle. I saw people in person. But I always had that in the back of my mind. I want us to be able to travel. I want to be able to live in some different places. And because I had some specificity about that, I was able to take some remote clients early to kind of just get a sense and start to troubleshoot that process. Like, how do you work with someone on Zoom in a way that makes them not just like glaze over? how do you, what are the platforms you need or the systems you need? And then when the pandemic started in 2020, because in my mind I had it that this was a plan I was going to be building towards. It was a moment where it was like, this is the moment. Like, nobody wants to see you in person. No one wants to come to downtown Seattle. I don't know if you remember, but Seattle was one of the ground zeros in the U.S. Like, now's your moment. People are going to get a chance to try this, and it's going to be great, and you're going to make it great. So
I love that. I mean, I think, too, going back to that question of, like, what do you want? And I think many of us don't know how to answer that question. If I'm being honest, I know there's a lot of things I want. But there's kind of like the what do you want, but then there's the question of what are you willing to work for, mm-hmm. right? And so when you're kind of like saying, I think everything starts with that question, I think that's a really hard thing to ask yourself. So for somebody who does this for a living, if you're talking to a leader, CEO or something, and you're having them ask that question, how does that normally get received? And how do you kind of maybe coach them into, for all those out there listening, I'm sure people are saying, oh, that makes sense. What do I want? And then like you go into that deep, like dark hole of like, what do I actually want? So how do you kind of coach through that? Or how do you, what's maybe some practical tips on thinking about what do you want versus what are you willing to work for?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. And I think that knowing what you want is less that it's hard and more that there are some predictable things that get in the way of us asking the question. Kind of like the speed bumps. So I think one of the things is, but to answer your specific question, I think we often get blocked by when we think about the work that we haven't even really been explicit about what might be the work. And I think the first place to go is to try and get really specific about what you think you want separate from the work. Because often we think like, oh, well, I might want that, but I have no idea how to get there. And so that can be a reason. Sometimes you think, well, that would be a lot of work, but we haven't actually defined, like, we have it as this like big gray cloud. We haven't actually said, well, what work would it really be? Or what might it look like if I actually gave myself a longer timeline? Like sometimes we think about, well, if I want that by next year, oh goodness, that's going to take a lot of hours. But what if I said, I want to build a 10-year plan to get to that? Suddenly that might look like a small amount of compounding every day, like a smaller thing, but it might not actually be that hard.
So you brought up a couple of things there, right? And kind of detaching from the work a little bit. And I talk about this on other episodes of my podcast, that there are kind of two types of people. There are those that work to live, meaning their passions lie outside of the job they do. They have a skill. They know how to leverage it. They're happy to go to their 9-to-5 and work so that they have, you know, they can travel, they can have a family, they can be involved in other societies or organizations, right? There's a lot of people out there that have the kind of work to live mentality and their passions lie outside. And then there's the other subset, which I fall into, it sounds like you fall into, which is like your work is your passion. And at times it's hard to decipher what is work and what is not. Right. And like, I don't know, there's been days where I'm like, wait, am I working? Am I not working? Like when I get to do this podcast, for example, I started this with a very simple reasoning of there's so much bullshit out there. We'll get into some of the bullshit about high performing habits here in a minute, right? There's a ton of bullshit out there. And I wanted a place where I could talk with entrepreneurs about the real, and that's why it's called The Bare Necessities. One, to get the song stuck in your head. And two, it's like, we talk about things that, and everything's linear and not everything is exciting. And so I bring that up of like the work for the passion, but you're talking about kind of breaking that out. I think that's really hard for people to do, is to break out what are passions, what are work, what are they good at? And I think taking that step back and kind of detaching yourself from the job and asking yourself those questions and then putting a plan and then figuring out where does the job fit in? Where does the passion fit in? What does this society work out? I think that's a really helpful way for a lot of people to just sit with themselves for a second. And I would even recommend like grabbing a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and having that conversation with yourself and writing it out.
Yes. I love that you said writing it out, because it can seem like this extra, maybe unnecessary step, but the process of trying to put something in words definitely tells you how much clarity you have. And the other thing I love about, like, have a cup of coffee, make it fun. Like, you know, put on your favorite music, something that puts you in a good mood. It doesn't have to be like deeply dark and serious. And here's the other thing. You don't have to like get it right. In fact, what we want is this evolving thing. And, but I find that, I call this like looping or like the spirograph. Did you ever like, are you familiar with the spirograph? Was that around for you?
Yes.
When I was a kid, it was around.
But, yeah, okay. I'm familiar with it. I'm still in that age group that I understand.
Okay.
There's probably a lot of people out there on the show that are like, wait, what? I don't know.
I know. That's why I'm like, okay. So the spirograph, you know, those little like stencil tools that you like pin one part of it down and then you take a pen and you run it around a bunch of times. You create this pretty floral design because it shifts just a little bit every loop that you make. And this is what I recommend to deal with the challenge of what do I want? It's the, if you ask yourself that question progressively over time, number one, we get more clarity. And it's okay if what you thought 6 months ago, you now are like, well, that's actually not quite right. Or maybe you actually like started to go after it. And that actually gave you data that you're like, oh, actually, you know, I don't know. I thought I wanted to do like a bunch of blogging for my business. Turns out I hate writing. Like, I don't know. But the point is, you learn things once you sort of state something and say, maybe it's this. And then you go live and you work and you embody that and it teaches you things. And then you get a better idea and you over time. And I think it's important to not think you have to get it on the like first go.
I think so many of us don't understand that, that this is a living artifact, right? This is something that changes. Like, we change as humans, like, you learn and you grow. And, you know, I think I might've said this podcast, but I haven't really. So I co-founded a company called Hap Day Group back in 2019 with a good friend of mine, Philip DeVecchio. It was a sales and service business. And we sold in February of 2022, but we knew the sale was kind of done summer of 2021. Obviously it takes time for like all that to like go through process, agreements, evaluating, blah, blah, blah. And so I kind of told myself from like summer of 2021 till 2023 that I wanted to be a consultant and a coach and spend 18 months figuring out what I didn't want. And I actually built, for the OGs of this podcast, I had Rise Up Coaching as a website. Now it's just robnapoli.com. And I had a bunch of courses that were going to be launched, a bunch of things, like the whole kind of traditional coaching business. Then I realized I didn't fucking want it after I spent $8,000 to build all these things and shoot content and get all this stuff done, and realized that's not what I want to do with my life. Right. And I think that that's okay. Like first I was like, man, that kind of sucks. But at the same point, it's like, no, I learned. I know with conviction what doesn't work for me and what does. I think that so many of us have, and that's why I asked the question again. It's like, what do you want? But like, what are you willing to work for or work at? Because there's a big difference about putting action to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I want to get into that with you. You know, when we talk about high performing habits, we see out there in the world a bunch of bullshit, right? To be a successful entrepreneur, you have to get up at 5 a.m. You have to do this. Like, no, you don't. If you're a fucking night owl, do not get up at 5 a.m. Like, if you're a creative person at night, you're not going to be able to biologically change your body to be a morning person. That's probably not possible. So you don't have to fucking do it. So I don't want to go down to that tangent, but there's a lot out there. So when we talk about high performing habits, where do we start? You know, we already talked about sitting down with ourselves and asking that question and writing it out, right? So we got those two things, but let's get into some other things. So how do we start? And then I want to get into how do we create habits, right? Like it's great to talk about these things, but these are the actions to set up habits, which is a whole other thing. So where do we start?
So I agree with you that there's a lot of performance that gets kind of mixed up with the productivity movement. Or like, you know, oh, you have to X, Y, and Z, or what's the system? This system will just do it for you. And I really steer away from that. It's a little too prescriptive. As you point out, it doesn't work for everybody. Like getting up at 5 a.m. if you're a night owl is not going to be the best way to use your energy. And so I often really start from some fundamental principles. And that's what I love about performance science is I think it is less prescriptive. And thus, it is much more adaptable for each person. And so when I coach individuals, I love it because I can say, we can look at the principle together and say, what does this mean for you as a person? And how could you get the most out of this principle based on your habits? So we talked about the first thing, which I call brutal focus. And it's more or less, we got to ask, what do you want? Like, if you want high performance, the first thing you have to say is, well, high performance at what? Like, what explicitly does that success look like for you? So we talked about that. I think the second piece of that becomes really important for how we use time. And I think when we often are talking about habits or productivity, what we're saying is like, how do I get more of what I want out of my time? And maybe even how do I enjoy that time better? So this point of you're saying, what do you really want to work for? Well, some of that has to do with how much you can enjoy that experience of doing the work. And it could be the same work, but doing it in one place or in one way, you just hate it. Like, you're like, this job sucks. But if you were actually able to do it in a different way, you might actually really enjoy it. So the second piece of brutal focus is we really have to ask ourselves, okay, given that that's the thing I want, what do I actually think are the big drivers towards that? And this is one of the places where we can eliminate a lot of the stuff or the noise that you just brought up. Like to be a successful entrepreneur, getting up at 5 a.m. has nothing to do with it. Now, whether or not you are, there's two big pieces of entrepreneurship. There's making stuff and there's selling stuff, and you need to do both. And so like often the drivers are, have you created value? It's a service or it's a product, it's something that people actually do want And then are you actively finding ways to connect with who wants it? And maybe is it scalable? But so like those are just some examples of when we start to say, no, what are the real drivers? Not did I have my green smoothie this morning? not even like social media. Social media can be a tool, but it's a great example of something that can suck a lot of people's time, but is not actually, isn't driving anything for them. So I like to ask this question, what is most important? Because then we can start to actually say, what should I be doing with my time? Like, but anyway, so that's, I think that is the second thing that I always start with. Because if we can get it right, it makes everything go better.
Before we get into what is the third thing, because I want to list, like, kind of like the idea of like listing of things in threes. So we have the first and second. I'm not going to, my OCD will not allow me to end this podcast without giving a third. But before I come to that, right, you, I have two veins I want to go down, but we're going to do this thing first. Because I really like this. You're talking about performance science. You're talking about adaptability. And number two is kind of what are those drivers? Thinking about your journey and your path to this, what happened to you, or where was the moment in time that you realized that what you were doing and your drivers didn't match up, right? Like the work that you were doing, the time that you were spending and your drivers, when did you realize that those didn't really quite match up in your life? Was it a moment? Was it a combination of experiences? Do you remember that time?
Is this like before I went into coaching or during the kind of entrepreneurship journey?
Either. Yeah. Really, like, do you remember those moments? I mean, and can you kind of share maybe a personal anecdote of how, because I think it's really interesting coaching these things for many of the people that coach, going through it is also like part of that, the coaching.
Yes.
And so just kind of like for you, what, where did that hit home? Where did that?
So
I could still remember the day. So yeah, I would love to just kind of hear yours. Like when did you sit down and realize your drivers didn't match up to your time and value?
Yes. So I have a great story from residency, and I think this is part of making that switch, is that I think I had a thought of like what it meant to me to be a doctor and what was important for that. I also have personal values around like being a team player, like that when there's a team effort that, you know, you got to make sure that the team is performing well. And if that means you need to take on some more stuff, you just take on some more stuff, right? Like you get the job done. I think one of the challenges in medicine is just staffing is very stressed for time. And I think I saw it as a human system. And so for me, one of the challenges as a resident, as you know, there's sort of the 80-hour work rule to try and protect sleep and make sure that residents are well-rested enough to perform well. And the challenge is you're always getting docked on your hours. You always have to turn in your hours. And I found that it took more hours than that to do the job well. So for me, doing the job well meant, I don't know, you got to go check on like that patient who you haven't seen all day. And maybe it's because things were actually, they were copacetic, you know, like nothing major was happening, but, you know, I'd stop by and see him on my way out. And I'm already running late, right? You know, it's like 8 p.m., maybe 8:30. But I was like, you got to go check on them. Or like if somehow the notes hadn't gotten in for your team, sometimes you have multiple residents on a team or whatever, like if you notice a patient's missing a note, well, you sit down and you do that note because it needs to get done. And I think one of the challenges is that, there are lots of people who help you and who are involved. There are nurses, there are PAs, there are case managers. The hospital runs because we have these amazing people who are all participating and working really hard for your health. I think I had a challenge of that, that I was spending too much time doing things that were of value to me, but that you would not survive if you continued to try and do them. And you have to be very focused. Doesn't mean providing bad care, but it means the care looks different than I think our idealized version of the care. That is my story. And I was like, there is not enough hours in the day, like, to make this sustainable.
Yeah. You start realizing where, you know, even when I started my business, you start realizing where things need to be done and where, how much time is spent on things that don't deliver the value you want to deliver, but still need to get done. And you got to figure out, is it sustainable? Can it be outsourced? How does this work?
Yes.
And sometimes it's those things that you realize, oh, this glorious thing that I thought that I wanted to be a doctor, to be a surgeon, it's this much time of the actual impact that I want to make and 90% of this. And that to me doesn't make sense. And that for so many people, yeah. I think they get into a role and they don't know, they don't realize that. And they're like, but then they don't know how to get out of it, or they don't want to get out of it, or they complain about it and they don't optimize for it. And I think that is such a big thing to look at, is just understanding how to make that work. Like, can you effectively make yourself change the way you go through that process to optimize your time? Is it that your values and your drivers are completely misaligned, and mm-hmm. what you thought was a really sexy, beautiful, gorgeous role for you that hit all the levers is actually very unsexy and uncool? That happens to all of us out there. I think, yeah. you know, I got into marketing because of Dom Draper and Mad Men. Only realized that was advertising and not marketing. You know,
oh, that's a good story. And sometimes you can't bully the reality, right? I think another principle of, like, kind of high performance, like how to think about this is, I have this thing: don't bully reality. So for me, what that meant was, no, like, this is actually what it will be to be a surgeon, and like, you can provide good care. It's just what that looks like is not what you thought it looks like. And I think I looked at that and I was like, nah, I can't outsmart this. This isn't I can't outsource it. You know, like, I can't change that. And that's a reality I shouldn't bully, nor should I sink more costs into the seven years of residency. So I stopped after 1 year. But there's other stuff that actually, we can change, and we often think, like, oh, I don't have influence, but we have a lot more agency to shape something. So, like, I don't know, you were giving an example before the show about, like, where you like to do your work, and that some, like, where, what location you pick has a huge impact. And so for you, you know, doing a job where you have some flexibility about where you can go work, that's something you have had some influence over. And so I often call this, like, the 10-90-90-10, where I think we often think we have 10% influence and 90% of things are, like, out of our influence. But I think it's actually the reverse, which is we have a lot more influence than we think we do.
And I think that I love that you share that, because I think so many of us are afraid to leverage that influence by even just asking the question. And not only asking the question to yourself, but to, you know, if you're sitting out there and you're listening and you're not a business owner and you're like, well, how do I make that work for me? Well, ask your boss, you know, ask for that time off, ask for that thing. Like, we're going to my wife's phone is paid for by her company, and we're heading to Mexico. And I was like, yeah, I have my, you know, Mexico's included in my plan. And she's like, well, I don't know about mine. I was like, why don't you just ask your boss? She's like, well, I don't want to feel like I'm abusing the work phone. I was like, yeah, but, like, they offered to take your phone over. You kept your same line. They offered to do all these things for you, knowing that if you ever left, that you'd get to keep your line and break it. Just ask, hey, do we have internet? Do we have free text and calling in Mexico so that I can have my phone on me? If I'm split up from the group, I have an ability to make a call. And it was like, for her, it was like an existential thing to ask the question. And it's like, they gave you that phone for a reason. They know that you're going to be doing all these things with your lives. And that's that 90-10-90 thing is, like, she probably has 90% influence on that decision, and asking would have been no issue. But for her internally, she fought against that. And I think so many of us are afraid to ask out there. And it's like, look, you have more influence than you think. You need to not be afraid. I mean, when you do that, though, and this is where I think the problem is that we're afraid to hear no. I grew up in sales, so, like, you know, a no is a good thing for me because it's closer to a yes. you have to be not afraid to ask, but also understand that no is a reasonable answer. And I think we're getting to a point where we just like, we only ask if we think they're going to say yes. Mm-hmm. And we've lost this. We have this such fear of rejection that it's hard. And I think that's what makes coaching virtually even harder at times, is like, you know, that disconnect. But yeah, I love this. Don't reality, the 10, 90, 90, 10. I think that for many of those people out there listening today, that's going to be hit home for sure. So I want to kind of get into something you mentioned earlier around kind of productivity, and we talk about productivity versus performance, and we're talking about habits, right? And there's prescription productivity, and there's all these things. When it actually comes to high performing habits, right? And putting that into, obviously we're not going to, we could probably do a whole like 50 pod session on how to create high performing habits, right? But what are, as we're trying to build habits, what are some maybe tips, tricks, or tools tangibly that we can take away, that if somebody out there is listening, like, I really want to become better at X, Y, Z, I want to start creating some better habits, where can they start? What are some tips, tricks, and tools that you have as like some good places to start without, you know, on their own?
Mm-hmm. So I think a great place to start is, let's just assume you identified something you think you might want. And I hedge that just because, again, you don't have to be 100% sure. But pick something, pick the thing you feel most excited about. Like that you just have that kind of gut of like, oh yeah, I want that. Like maybe it's, I want to be healthier. I want to exercise more in 2023 or whatever it is. Or I want to, I want to really invest in my sales this year. But like pick something like that. And then the thing that I think is most important, I just call this the 90-90-90 methodology for building momentum. And it's meant to basically get rid of a lot of the blockers that make it hard to form a habit. So I say you pick the area, and then the most important thing is you start working on something. Now, if you can pick something that you're like, oh yeah, I know that I could make more sales calls, let's just say, then you already sort of know what the thing is. Sometimes we don't start because we don't know. Like, I want this thing, but I do not know how to influence that. And that's when I say, great, what you get to get started on is learn something about it. So it could be, think of three people you know who seem to like know something about this or are successful in this area, and like set up coffee with them. It could be, hey, there's that book sitting on my bookshelf that I've been meaning to read and take some ideas out of it. That's a good way to start. Like, and I'm not even saying you have to sit down and read the whole book. I'm saying I'm going to read 20 minutes a day before I go to bed, right? So make it manageable. Often things that occur in chunks of 30 minutes or less. So make it small. This is totally from Tiny Habits, by the way, which is a great book on habit formation if people are interested. BJ Fogg, I think, is the author, but make it small. So, and it's okay if you don't know, because then the job to get started is to say, how could I know something about this? And so the first part of the 90-90-90 is that 90% of people don't get started. So we find a way to get started, even if it's, I got to learn about this thing before I even know what I would do to impact it. So the second piece of the 90-90-90 is that once 90% of people, 10% of people start, and then after that, 90% of people don't keep going. And so, like, if you're still learning, like, and you need to keep learning, like, keep going on that. Find a new book, or ask for a recommendation of someone else you might meet with to talk about it, or interview a couple providers who you might contract to help you with something. But maybe you identify some really clear steps where you're like, those strike me as good things. I could do those. Then it's like, okay, how do I keep going and do a little bit that might compound towards what I want? So then the key thing is that, notice I'm not saying like, don't try and improve it. Just try and do it and like get the satisfaction, reward yourself for like, I did it. Because the third 90, that is where we get to improving what we're doing. But the problem is we often try and start improving things that we're doing like right away, and that just kills our fire. It's like hitting the brakes every time, you know, you're trying to drive down the road and like hitting the brakes 20 times before you hit the next block. It just kind of kills our natural fire. And so I always say, break it up into three steps. Get going. Don't stop. Just like make sure you keep working on the thing. Keep it in front of your focus, you know, front of mind. And then once you've kind of really gotten into the sense of you understand this thing you're working on, like you're doing, and you know how to get yourself to do it, that's a moment when you can start to say, are there any changes I'd make to that? Like now that I've had maybe a month or more of just doing the thing, that small impactful thing, what might I change? But I like to keep it small because the most important thing I think is maintaining our momentum on something. Like when you're on a sailboat, as long as water is flowing over the rudder, you can steer the boat. The moment it like stops, you can't steer it anywhere.
Yeah. I love this. You very eloquently stated what I've told people before. I always talk about like goal markers in the sand, like keeping it small, putting it in the sand so that you can like climb up the mountain, you pull it out of the sand and you take that goal marker and you put it in the next one, right? Mm-hmm. Like for many of us, the best example is like losing weight, right? We put things in the future tense. I'm going to lose 30 pounds in the year of 2023. Mm-hmm. That's a big goal versus like, I'm going to lose 5 pounds in January and I'm going to lose 10 pounds in February. Right. And if you like put these small goals and you put it in the like the current tense, like I'm going to do, you're more likely to put that time, energy, and effort into doing it. Right. And so I always talk about putting goal markers in the sand as you're climbing the mountain, because guess what? There's always going to be a new mountain to climb. Right. Once you kind of create that consistency. But to stop thinking too big, I think too many people put these big goals. We try to manifest it, and people that manifest the things they want manifest, I think, I want to say manifest small in a negative way. They manifest realistic things and they go about putting action to that.
Yes.
And manifestation happens. And I say this about luck, right? Luck happens when opportunity meets preparation, mm-hmm. right? We all need a little bit of luck.
Definitely.
In life.
Yeah.
But you create luck, and those that seem to be lucky put themselves in positions to always be successful. Because they're putting into action. They're not just sitting around waiting on the couch for the money to drop. They may go be playing a lottery, but they're working three jobs to hustle, blah, blah, blah. And like they're putting good out. Mm-hmm. So I love this idea of make it small and make it manageable. Cause that I think for many people is so hard. We want to change. And I love that you brought this up. Everyone wants to improve shit before they figure out what it is that they're doing wrong. It's like, I'm going to improve this. I'm going to improve that. Well, it's like, ooh. Really? Do you really need to prove that? That's kind of working well. Why don't you figure out what it is that's wrong first?
Yeah. Well, also it creates confusion. And like when we lose clarity, our motivation also generally drops because we're like, well, why? It's going back to what you said. What are you willing to work for? I actually think that we're willing to work for a lot more than we think we are if we feel like we have clarity that it's actually going to get us what we want. Now, sometimes you're right. You learn that you don't want to do it. Like, you're like, oh, this coaching webinar, I'm actually just not interested. And that's great. Don't bully that. But often we wonder whether the work is worth it. Not that we don't like the work. And so this is where don't create confusion before you like have some momentum, you know, before you've actually had some time to gather by doing, to like run the experiment and really kind of see how it feels as you build some self-efficacy. I think we like being good at things. And so, well, it takes a little while to be good at the first habit you decide to do. So give yourself a little time before you put yourself in that uncertain position of trying to do something harder or different than that.
I resonate with that so much. I was taking some notes as you were saying that because it hits home, right? And just the fact that we need to, I think it comes down to a little bit that everyone's looking for a silver bullet, right? That magic bullet when there isn't one. It's you, and it's putting action. And I think that if you take anything from this to create habit and high performing habits, you need to first take action. right? Action on what do I want? What am I willing to work for? What am I excited about? And then learn. Take the first step, learn, learn more. And I think that is such an amazing thing to think about. And when we sit back and put that as in perspective, the shit gets easier. We make the shit harder than it needs to be, in my opinion. But at the same point, that's because it's hard for us as humans to look in the mirror and have that conversation with ourselves. Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah. And I think a part of that challenge is we, as human beings, like our evolutionary biology, we want to mimic other people, whether it's wanting what they might want or doing the stuff they're doing to get it, or even to just wanting to feel as successful as other people look. So, but we don't have a lot of insight into actually like each other's situations. And there's just a lot of that I just find like gets in the way of starting, managing to not stop. And then like giving ourselves space to run learning loops, to spirograph, right? Like to keep things moving a little bit at a time. And the truth is, then going back to something we said much earlier, this idea of like, well, what if you gave yourself 10 years? You know, what if you looked over a longer timeline and let yourself compound on something rather than try and figure out how you were going to do it by Q2?
Yeah.
And
I think that it's scary too, to we think, and I think the pressure of life is so fleeting and things have to happen today, 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 right? We live in a microwave economy that it's like, give yourself 10 years, give yourself, hell, 2 years. You know, put your head down for 6 months learning something and letting the spirograph happen to see, like, when you lift your head up in 6 months, what actually is going to be happening around you and how far you've come. I think we're so stuck on the microwave economy that we forget to kind of put that in perspective. So I love that. Like, think about what you can accomplish. Life is short, but there's also some longevity to it. And you as a human have this amazing opportunity to experience so much of it in our time here on Earth. And so we need to make the most of those experiences.
I love it.
So I know we're kind of getting close to time here, and I appreciate it. So, you know, we never really talked about this, but you know, your company is called, how do you pronounce it? Thaha?
Thaxa.
Thaxa. Okay. Thaxa, executive coaching, which, you know, I love that you found this. I guess it feels like it's not that long ago, but it's been over, what, 10 years now, right?
In February, I will have my 10-year anniversary. Yeah.
That is amazing. So as you started this, and I love going back to kind of your story of, you know, your passion for performance science and kind of where the fields of strategy, productivity, and psychology intersect. So if you had to take out the last, you know, kind of 10 years of going through this and running your own business as an entrepreneur, you know, what's one key, maybe lesson or key learning that has kept you motivated 10 years? You know, we talked a little bit at depth, you know, the moments you had as as a resident to the moment of becoming an entrepreneur. So 10 years later, as you're about to, you know, when this episode comes out, you'll be right before you celebrate your 10-year anniversary with your business. You know, what's kept you going? What's kept that passion and that fire and those drivers aligned to your values for you? What's kind of a key takeaway that you would look at of those last 10 years?
I think a key takeaway, one is I keep betting on myself. And that, it's interesting, leaving medicine, there's actually a lot of things that prepared me to coach that transferred from medicine, and also how I think about problems from the science that I did. But really, like, I did not have business training. I had none of that. And so it was really going into, in some ways, a really different world. And a lot of people were like, well, why do you think you're going to be able to do that? And I think one of the things is that I come back to, I feel good about betting on myself. And that is very different from saying that I know how to do things all the time, or that things aren't new or they aren't scary. But that I know I've always been a person who, if you give me enough time, that I have a very steep curve, but I have a slower starting curve than many people. In fact, I think it. I have this funny story, like from residency, when I think halfway through, or maybe two thirds of the way through, my chief resident was like, "She's like, you're an MD PhD, like you're not just an MD." And I was like, "Yes." And she's like, "That's why you ask all those questions." She's like, "You're trying to understand the system," and I'm like, "Yes, because I want to be able to do things independently and not have to ask you questions, you know, all the time." And so I'm trying to figure out how it works, but it takes me a while. Like my, you know, download is, takes a while, and then I can do a lot of stuff with it. Then I move very quickly. So I think that's, that is, one piece, but I think the other piece is just giving myself that time. So, it's the second 10 years when I'm having more conversations, I'm creating more visibility. I didn't actually do very much social media, anything for the first 10 years, but I gave myself time to learn how to sell, how to like pitch and talk about my business and the problems that I was trying to solve for people. And just to allow yourself some time to become good at something and to create strategies that don't require that you be good at something right away. So you can plan your business plan. You can do this to say how, like, what's a curve that will compound that I know I will get better at, but that it doesn't, I don't get just one chance, basically. And so those are some of my takeaways, I think.
I love that. And, you know, betting on yourself, I'm a huge proponent of that. I'll always bet on myself. But also comes back to that 90-90-90, right? 90% of people don't start, 90% people don't keep going, and 90%, you know, try to improve. Like, you've given yourself time to be part of that 10% in each one of those buckets and say, if you give yourself the time to do these things, it will happen. Success does not happen overnight. And it's through those lessons that you feel more confident going into the next 10 years. And I think every major key business owner in this world of, this is why I started this podcast, making things look sexy. It's all overnight success, but no one saw the 7 to 10 years behind the scenes to be successful when the time came. So I appreciate you kind of sharing and highlighting that. Carla, I had a lot of fun. I know I could spend hours with you on this call.
Thanks, Rob.
Where can people find you? Where can they get in touch if they want to learn more about you, what you're doing, or potentially hire you for something?
So a great place, if you're just kind of interested in performance science, a great place to follow me is LinkedIn. So whenever I'm having conversations, and each one's a little different, we cover different principles. So I'm at Carla-Fowler on LinkedIn. And so that's a good place to follow me. And then if you're interested in coaching more specifically, my website is at thaxa.com, T-H-A-X-A. And you can, there's a lot of great FAQs up there, but there's also, you can message me through the site. And I'm always interested in finding my next great client. And so if that's a conversation that would be helpful, we can set up some time to talk more about it, what that might look like.
Awesome. I will make sure to drop all those links in the show notes. So the website, the LinkedIn, I'll also even add in, I know you're starting to get going on Twitter, so I'll add in your Twitter handle in there as well. So if you'd like to connect with Carla, all the links, easy to click on. Carla, thank you so much for joining us here today. I appreciate having you on the show.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob. It was a pleasure.
You bet. Baron Nation, once again, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, stay well and rise up, y'all.
Baron Nation, thanks for listening to the Bare Necessities of Entrepreneurship. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review.